Finding a Marriage Partner, the seventh talk in a series titled Love, Sex, and Marriage, was presented by Nancy Scott and Larry Barber on May 10, 2005, at an evening class of McKinsey Study Center, an institute of Gutenberg College. The copyright for this recording is held by Gutenberg College, Inc., 2005. Gutenberg College is a nonprofit organization, and contributions may be made at www.gutenberg.edu. This material may be copied and distributed in whole for non-commercial and educational purposes, subject to the inclusion of this introduction. All other rights reserved. A brief break occurs in the middle of the following recording. It is the result of the original audio tape switching to the second side.
I invited Larry to join me as I present this tonight because I thought it was more conducive to kind of a discussion format and kind of a dialogue. So it's going to look a little bit different tonight. What we're going to do is I'm going to go through a couple of several different layers of topic that relate to the subject of finding a marriage partner. And then I'll have Larry weigh in on those different points of view and ideas and have him add some things. And then we'll just kind of go that way throughout the topic, and then we'll open it up for discussion and invite your questions and comments from there.
Sounds good.
So, yes, as Larry pointed out, this isn't necessarily a how-to sort of topic, but it's rather what are some general principles for how do we relate to the opposite sex as we move toward trying to find someone to join our lives with. We've spent several weeks in this course talking about what marriage is, what sexuality is, talked about marriage being a commitment, a promise made to being a certain kind of person. Larry talked about that the first week. We talked then about biblical sexual ethics and a theory of sexuality that understands our sexuality as a natural language that just does communicate a commitment to making this person the very most special person in our lives, and that we really can't not say that with our sexuality.
Does that all make sense to you?
Is everybody tracking so far? Have you heard that so far in this course? Okay. So what's kind of implicit in that, I don't know if this has been clearly stated before, but it seems to me that there's two states for people to be in. One is being married and one is being not married. And the way that God intends for us to relate to relationships with the opposite sex in an intimate way is with marriage. And so we find two states available to us. One is to be married and one is to not be married. And I think in our culture, that's a really difficult call because we have kind of loosened the boundaries so widely in our culture, in our society, that says sexuality is to be, it's kind of a personal expression, it's something that just ought to be enjoyed.
It's my right.
It's my right. It's a very different perspective than what we're saying here. We're basically saying that if you're not a married person, then really our sexuality is not to be expressed. And also that the way to find a marriage partner is to do something really different, perhaps, than trying on different partners and deciding kind of shopping for them, which is sort of our culture's model. So first I'm going to talk a little bit about what our culture sort of says about how to find a marriage partner, and then what we might be saying that's pretty different than that. Now, given that if there's these two states, one is being married and one is not being married, there is a transition, it seems like. You don't just go from one to the other like that. So there's going to be a transitional sort of relationship or time to get there, and we'll talk a little bit about that as well. But really what I want to state clearly is that the two ways to be are either married or not married. And the idea of being unmarried and having a series of intimate relationships is really not what we're designed for. Would you add to that, or how would you say that differently?
Is this where we're at right here?
Mm-hmm.
Well, as Nancy mentioned, and as people at Jack, is it Jack that talked about sexual ethics here and sexuality?
And Ron.
Mm-hmm. That when the sexuality is a language and it's designed such that there's this intrinsic commitment that is expressed when you're sexual with another person, and when you're sexual with another person, you cannot not express that commitment. It just does. It's just intrinsic in our sexuality. So when you express sexuality without kind of deciding or making a commitment to be committed, then you're saying something that isn't true to that person. You're communicating something with your body that you're not saying straight up with a commitment. And so there's a lot of confusion.
And it's actually lying.
It's actually lying, yeah.
Not being honest. Okay.
And that's it's. I think one of the things that Nancy's saying is that there's two states. You're either married or you're not married, and there's this transition. That doesn't mean, I think particularly in this culture, being not married and not being sexual is a very difficult thing. It's an uncomfortable thing, it's a hard thing, it's not an easy thing, and being in transition from being not married to being married is also a very difficult thing too. It's not easy. So we're not just saying, okay, here's the rule. This is not what we're talking about here tonight. It's not about rules. We're talking about some principles and trying to help you think about it. But we're also saying it's a very difficult thing, just even given who we are, given the fact that we're sexual beings and we're broken and living in the culture that we live in, it's a very, very difficult thing. And I don't know that I've talked to any person who's married who hadn't struggled with it or failed with it at some point.
Or not married.
Or not married, yeah.
Who hasn't struggled with it.
Right.
And failed with it.
Yes.
So there's a term that that someone coined around here a number of years ago that has gotten some press. And that's something I want to talk a little bit about, too, and that's emotional fornication. We've been talking about our sexuality and how our sexuality doesn't really have an expression outside of marriage. One of the tricks, I think, in not being married, and especially in this transitional time of trying to find a marriage partner, is being careful that we, like Larry's saying, we communicate something sexually with our bodies. We just do if we express ourselves sexually with another person. And it's lying if we do that apart from a stated commitment that says, I want to join my life with yours. So that's the sexual part. But I think there's an emotional component also that we have to be really aware of, that we can easily make promises to one another on an emotional level without saying anything, without stating something, but we are kind of intrinsically committing to being in a different kind of relationship with someone, whether we call it a dating relationship or whether we call it a significant other relationship or whether we call it we're in a committed relationship. That's a really popular term these days. I hear that often among even among middle school and high school students, that's, you know, there's dating or there's hanging out or whatever. But when we really decide to be serious with each other, we're in a committed relationship. And, of course, that's one of many that are going to come down the road before finding someone to marry at an age that's appropriate to marry. What I want to suggest is that being cautious about what we promise emotionally is very much also important as what we decide to promise with our bodies. And so the way that we engage in interpersonal relationships with the opposite sex is a really big deal, and I think we don't really do it very well in our culture because we're so sold the idea that we should never be alone, we don't have to be alone, being alone is not natural, and why wait until you're married to be with someone that you care about and those kinds of things.
I'm not sure it's not even just being alone as much as it is, feeling alone. I shouldn't have to feel alone.
Yeah. It's a good distinction.
I was wondering, what are some ways that we communicate, what are some ways that people could communicate that they're more committed than they really are? Mm-hmm. Some practical things.
Okay.
We might talk about that.
Yeah.
Is that kind of where you want to go right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. And it kind of goes toward some of the problems that I think exist in our culture's dating model.
Okay.
That we have this kind of model that you choose someone to get to know, and you do that in the context of... I feel almost sort of out of date, by the way, by talking about dating, because I don't know if that's even the language that's used anymore. I think it's the same idea that's out there that used to be, but I think it's become almost like, well, nobody really dates anymore, maybe. Would you agree with that, you guys? That mostly we just kind of decide we're going to hang out, or, you know, we might be hanging out with someone, or
I don't think anybody's going to admit that they date here.
It's taboo, isn't it? But I think one of the problems with kind of the idea that you just kind of find people to get interested in and to develop a relationship with is that that is a way that, well, two things. One is that I'm not sure it's a really good way to find out the kind of information you want to find out about someone you might decide to marry. Because in general, in kind of more formal dating situations, or even when we're interested in each other and trying to put our best foot forward, even if it's not on a date, we're going to be communicating that we're going to be saying, I think you're really cool, and I hope you really think I'm cool, and this is what's cool about me. And we don't really get to see the wrinkles.
All I'm really going to show you is what I think you might think is cool.
Yes.
You're not going to see the other stuff.
Yes. I'm not going to be really real with you because I'm going to present what I think you might want to be buying, because I'm seeing what I kind of want to be buying, I think, and what you're presenting to me is a really good thing. So one of the problems with that is that I don't know that that's really, you're going to get a really good, the right kind of information from that kind of exchange to really make a decision about whether or not someone would make a good marriage partner. And secondly, I think in that situation, we're very prone to communicating that we're committed in a way that we maybe not are not committed. That it seems to me that in our culture, we're especially prone to, if I go out to coffee with someone more than once, there's almost an implied commitment that you've called me back, we're going on a second arranged meeting, whether we call it a date or not, I don't know. But then it's kind of like we're on track. Does that make sense? It's like we're going somewhere with this. And that can happen the second time, the second meeting. And so
it's like you're an item.
Yes. Yeah, and all of a sudden there's this implicit sort of definition to what you're doing. And so I think that's a way that we can imply commitment that we're not really making, but that we so want to make, or so want to have be real on some level, or not feel alone, mm-hmm. To kind of have someone that's... gosh, I even heard a really bad television show call it... We've all heard eye candy, but this was arm candy. This was having the right person on your arm, you know.
Arm what?
Arm candy.
Arm candy?
Yeah. Yeah, get it?
I think like, I do.
Yeah.
I'm having a problem with it.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. Arm candy.
Serious?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like an accessory. I mean, it's like wearing the right clothes, having the right person with you.
Arm candy.
This wouldn't be in our community or our culture. This is out there, you know. Just
referring
kidding.
To as a... I mean, sort of like blatantly out there referring to a person as arm candy?
Yes. Yeah. You're shocked. I know. Has anybody else heard that term?
I would be offended.
Yes. You think?
I would.
I would too. I would be offended as well. Yeah.
It's offensive.
Yeah, it is offensive.
Wow.
But I think it kind of gets at what we are so sold in our culture that...
Don't they get it?
I don't think so.
Wow.
You're just so stunned. We have to take a minute.
I have not heard that word. That is unbelievable.
Yeah.
That's like crazy.
Yeah.
That's like mentally crazy.
Yeah.
Mentally ill, you know. That kind of crazy. Wow.
We live in a really twisted culture.
It's hard to get my mind around that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Anybody else having trouble with that?
I can't even imagine what... I mean, it's strange because I can't imagine a person who truly wants to be cared about would go for that, go with that mm-hmm. idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's that comes to, I think, another thing I was going to say is talking about the way that kind of a sequential relationship model that we get into a relationship, and then when we decide we're not going to commit to that person, we drop, we break up, we kind of, it's almost like a pseudo marriage on an emotional level, even if there isn't a sexual expression in this. It's a very difficult thing to break up with that person because we've gone so far emotionally together that we've begun the process of caring about each other and working at how to do that. And I think that's the trouble with it's not conducive to true vulnerability to not be in a committed relationship. And by committed relationship, what I'm saying is marriage. I'm not talking about the high school committed relationship. That means we're exclusively dating. I'm talking about marriage.
I'm talking being absolutely committed to another person's
right.
best interest
right.
and committed to being a particular kind of person.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that's really what marriage is about.
Yes, it is.
And in that way, being vulnerable is the appropriate thing to do in that context. It's really not even the appropriate thing to do.
Well, when you're really committed to goodness, too, what you're really doing is also being open and honest about your own brokenness.
Mm-hmm.
And in a pseudo-marriage or a dating relationship, you're letting them see what you think they want to see, not the real deal.
Right.
Way, way different.
Right. And it continues to reinforce the belief mm-hmm. that I'm really rejectable
yeah.
anyway, because I can only show this much.
Right.
And as soon as I show this much, the relationship is over.
Right.
And that's really hard on a person. And
well, it's also...
And it's really...
It makes sense cruel. That there's a lot of divorces, too, with that kind of mentality.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Because even in marriage, we think we're only supposed to go so far, and then if we go this far,
well,
we find out that we're broken.
Well, it's not what we thought it was supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're going to go find it someplace else. We married mm-hmm. the wrong person.
Yeah.
Rather than being the right kind of person.
Right. Yeah.
I was thinking one of the ways mm-hmm. people can communicate or can be... communicate this kind of vulnerability or communicate this sort of pseudo-marriage thing mm-hmm. is by the kind of conversations that they have
mm-hmm.
with the opposite okay. sex.
Okay.
I mean, they could talk about... I mean, I think there's an okay... There's a sense in which it's okay to be open and real to a point with people, particularly with the opposite sex, but I think you have to really ask yourself the question, what is it that I want from this conversation, and what I'm saying going to impact this other person? How are they going to take that or interpret that?
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm responsible for how they interpret it necessarily, but just understanding the fact that they're going to interpret it and how are they going to interpret it.
And I am responsible for what I'm communicating.
Exactly.
And I have to be careful to know what
right.
it is I'm communicating.
Right.
And
or, yeah, if I have these sort of intimate conversations, if I spend a whole lot of time with them by themselves having all these long intense conversations, what kind of stuff does that communicate? Mm-hmm. And what is that saying to them? And do I, am I intentionally communicating that to them?
Mm-hmm. Is that what I want to be communicating?
Is that what I want to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a really important part, that we really take on what is it that our actions are saying?
Yeah.
It's part of what you're saying is
yeah.
that what we do speaks really volumes.
Absolutely.
About mm-hmm. what we want from that person, what we think we're giving, what yeah. we want to get.
And it really means that we have to pay attention to ourselves in terms of and be kind of aware, think about what we want, and also be aware of how people are responding to us.
Mm-hmm. Kind of listen in a different way
right.
to ourselves and to the process between myself right. and another person.
Right. Yeah, what happens and what kind of what consequence there is, what really actually happens and what the result is.
Mm-hmm. The feedback kind
yeah.
of.
Yeah, or even just the dynamic, in terms of the dynamic that mm-hmm. takes place.
Even the nonverbal feedback.
Mostly the nonverbal feedback.
Yeah.
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 So it's the kind of conversations, it's mm-hmm. the amount of time, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of gets to the exclusivity that you were talking about.
Yes. Okay. How would you talk about, to kind of shift gears from, we're talking about kind of this dating model that maybe isn't the best way to get to know someone, but rather we'd like to propose that friendship is really a more appropriate way to really get to know someone, because then you see them interact with other people, you see them in different contexts, and you see how they just really are. I mean, you really get more appropriate kinds of information for making a decision about someone to marry from seeing people in their everyday life rather than seeing people in this kind of protected, I want you to see what I think you want to see sort of environment mm-hmm. that we're talking about. How would you talk about what you're saying about how we communicate a level of commitment in a friendship between a man and a woman? That how do you judge when a friendship is becoming exclusive, for example?
I think one of the ways that I would know is watching how I respond when I don't get to spend time with them or when they want to spend time with somebody else.
Okay.
And if it really bugs me, then it probably means that it's more, it's really more to me than just a friendship, or that I want more than a friendship.
So you're talking about
or that I want, I'm really thinking about myself rather than even what may be in their best interest.
Mm-hmm. So again, you're kind of talking about a way to listen to me, listen
right.
to my own
right. Right.
feelings and desires and responses, reactions mm-hmm. to different events. And that can underline and tell me, I think I'm interested in more here.
Yes.
Then.
And is that? And then ask myself the question: Do I really know this person? Do they really know me? Am I really willing to? It's making a commitment to a person. The commitment to be a particular kind of person, be committed to goodness, mm-hmm. be committed to their best interests is a huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. Mm-hmm. It's not small potatoes.
Yes, it's a really serious thing.
Very serious.
To move in that direction. It's not something that should be taken on lightly, or like it's just for the summer. We can get to know each other better
right.
over the summer. It's a really big deal. You're talking about a lifelong commitment.
Right.
To try to learn how to love someone.
And I think it's a real process. I don't think it's easy. I think it's... Christine and I were friends for a long time, probably 3 years, and I found myself certainly wanting more. I mean, I was like smitten, like right away, you know. And
you were smitten.
I was smitten.
From day one.
It's history.
Smitten.
Yeah, I really liked her, and I wanted her to like me really bad. So, but I also was, at least, I understood the idea of being committed to somebody in their best interest. They sort of theoretically understood that. I mean, I valued that. But I got a chance to actually work with myself and find out that I wanted more. And okay, I had to work with that and sort of move away and kind of let go in some ways. Mm-hmm. And then it was really difficult because she was talking to me about these guys who wanted to date her, and she would go on dates and stuff like that. That was pretty brutal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was going to say, I've heard the other side of the story. And
I was the counselor.
Yeah.
She talked to me about all these other guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's harsh.
It was... Yeah.
Tough.
Very. Yeah.
And so you were really in a process of really trying to be self-aware and be kind with her,
right,
but also really know how hard that is for you.
Yeah, and there were situations.
But not put it onto her.
Right.
Maybe.
And there were situations that happened, circumstances outside of any of our control, like her mom had to go to the hospital kind of thing. First time we played tennis, then that kind of, I took her to the hospital to visit her mom. So that's kind of a bonding experience.
Yes. It's pretty intimate.
Very intimate. Experience. And so that said something, just in and of itself. And then, so that was easy for me to sort of want to move even closer. And so I had to work with that. And then there was a situation where there was a guy who was a youth pastor who was impersonating a police officer and raping women.
Yes.
And she was, he locked her in her office once. And for some reason, he let her call me. And I communicated to him very clearly that he better open the door. I was going to be there. And it wasn't going to be pretty. Mm-hmm. So that created a bond too. Mm-hmm. It's more than just...
Yeah.
So I had to, I mean, it was easy for me to kind of move towards her and, mm-hmm. and see our relationship more than just a friendship. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was this kind of counselor, protector. Mm-hmm.
Even though, if my understanding is right, she was kind of doing this.
Oh, she was.
Like?
Definitely. She was scared.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting the way you're talking about it is you're kind of doing this thing of deciding kind of how to move toward her, how to care about her. But in the midst of that...
And caring about her is kind of moving away some.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. It's like caring about her actually meant moving away at times.
Right.
But it also meant really showing up and being there for her.
Right.
In some really significant ways.
Right.
But not in a way that was going to push her or crowd her or demand anything from her.
Exactly.
Was that because of her...
Well, not just because of that. I mean, that was... I mean, there were times where that was actually helpful, but... also just kind of working with myself and figuring out this isn't caring about her. This is more about me than it is about her.
Yes.
And and thinking about somebody's best interest is really thinking about what's best for them, not just what I want.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So working with that.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, I wasn't clear about it all the time. I mean, it's it's a messy deal.
Yeah, really messy.
And confusing at times because there's infatuation and all that stuff, and that's
it's a powerful force.
Well, I think people around here describe it as a drug-induced state. Makes you do things you wouldn't normally do in your right mind.
Right, like get married.
Yeah.
Another thing that I know from the other side of the story, though, is that. That it was that very process of you really working at that that gave Christine the information that she needed, that you really were the kind of person she wanted to join her life to in the end. I mean, that that those things, those choices on your part really showed her your character or your desire for character.
Yeah.
Anna, does that make sense?
And one of the things that was that happened too was that I was very careful about how I talked to her about that process that was going on in me. Mm-hmm. I didn't put that on her.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. There were other people that I could talk to about it but and get perspective, but I didn't put that on her.
Yes. And that's actually one of the points that I wanted to talk a little bit about, and that is how to define the relationship. We've also talked around here about, I believe it used to be called anyway, the DTR.
The DTR.
Is that right? The Define the Relationship talk? Yeah.
Wow.
Got that?
I'm out of the loop, man.
And the idea is that we're friends. We're stating that we're all, you know, we're friends. We're hanging out. We're just getting to know each other. But then when it gets to a certain point, there's a tension there, and we want to define the relationship. So we want to say, what are we doing here? Are we friends? Are we more than friends? What are we doing? And I think that's a really tricky thing to navigate. And it's not clean and neat. It's really messy. And not going to get it right.
And that can actually communicate more than you want to communicate.
And that can really be an intimate talk that actually communicates more than you want it to communicate. So, and what we were saying earlier is that this is what, if what you're talking about is moving from a state of being friends to being married, then that's a very serious discussion to undertake. It's not something to take on for the next month or for the next half a year. It's not that. We're talking about making it about marriage. So that kind of underlines, when do you have that conversation? It might be really down the road of knowing each other for quite a long time.
Right.
It doesn't mean that we don't end up sharing what we might be struggling with about that process. But I think what Larry's saying is that was really, I think, very important, is that not if it's about me, not if it's my anxiety that's pushing me to have a conversation with you so that you can tell me what you think about me and help me feel better. I think that's a really big part of the push to want to define the relationship, is the anxiety that we feel that we don't really know where we stand and we don't really know what's going to happen. And we want to know that.
Or I don't want to feel lonely.
Or I don't want to feel
I want to know that somebody cares about me. So
yes.
This particular person that I mm-hmm. have assigned value to, I want them to value me. So the question is, do they value me? So mm-hmm. I get that question, or I work at getting that question answered. Rather than mm-hmm. not having an answer. Mm-hmm.
So it does seem, though, like there's a pendulum here where you can either have that conversation way too often and be intimate in a way that really isn't appropriate, or be making decisions about commitment that are really premature, or you could swing the other direction and have a lot of feelings for a person, be engaged in a friendship with them, and never actually be honest with them about what's going on for you.
Right.
And they may or may not reciprocate, they may or may not be on the same page, but I think, like Larry's saying, when the drug kicks in, when there's infatuation going on, it's very difficult to not interpret every move by that other person as being significant and as communicating something extremely important. Does that make sense? And
on one side of the scale or the other.
Yes, yes. Either he's in or he's out.
Yeah, that extreme.
Yeah, right. And so I think that that's a really important thing to recognize too, and to be kind of working with self-awareness on, is what are the feelings of infatuation really telling me? Because I think they're really more telling me something about me than they are telling me about something about the other person. So when we see the other person through rose-colored glasses and we've got this drug going, did someone talk about that, about romance? We've done that, right? Okay. I think that was that might have been, yeah, one of the talks that I was sick for. But so we kind of have that in the background. But so when we have that drug flowing through our veins, it's a very difficult prospect to think clearly about what's going on with another person. And I think it's a really important thing to take on. So rather than interpreting as I'm seeing everything that they do as being significant, as in terms of a lot of different levels, I mean, we could probably go on about that, but several that I think of are things like, something he does I'm going to interpret as he's interested in me, or something he does I'm going to interpret it as he's not interested in me, or I'm going to think he's the perfect person for me because he did this, or he's the absolute wrong person for me because he did this. And it's like, it's all going through this rose-colored tinted glass that's keeping me from really seeing whatever this person is doing as just being what they're doing for some reason that I may have no information about whatsoever. But I'm putting it all out there. When I think, in fact, what my feelings can tell me at that point, what the infatuation can be telling me, is something about what I need and want, and what I'm longing for, and what I'm uncomfortable with, and what I
am insecure about.
What I'm insecure about. And also, I think, on a very real and very ordinary human level, that I'm built to be with someone else, that I'm actually created to be in a marriage. And I think we really are created for that. And so when we're not there, it's kind of an unnatural state, and we don't fit as well. And so it can help me know that that's true about me, and that I have needs that aren't being met right now, that I actually am created for this, and I don't have it. And that's hard. That's a really hard place to be.
So especially when everybody in our culture is telling you,
don't be alone.
Don't be alone, and you shouldn't. You deserve, or you shouldn't feel have to feel alone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you add to that the sort of Christian thing is that, or even that God doesn't want you to feel that way either.
Yes, God would not want that for you.
Right.
Yeah. Can you add anything to that, or what would you?
I think that's good.
That? So when it comes to the talk, I think it's just really important that we be clear with ourselves about what we want and about whether or not this is actually in the best interest of the other person. So if I'm the one initiating the conversation, like Larry was talking about with Christine, he's going to be really cautious about what does she need right now? Is this what she needs? Is this a good thing for me to do given where she is right now? Is this appropriate? I mean, how else would you...
Not just not me, but what's in her best interest.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's my
what's
language.
What's good for her?
What's best for her? Yeah, what's best for her.
Yeah, yeah. Not that you really know that.
Correct.
How do you know that? There you go, right? There's the rub. But so, it's not really that we're going to get it right or that we're going to know, but to try to be committed to what's best for this other person as sort of this thing that we're going to hold up and say, this is what I want to value, this is what I want to go after. And that's a really important thing to go after.
It's kind of like being in process of learning, mm-hmm. of being open to discovering another person and what is in their best interest. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, it can change from moment to moment, but it's different with different people. And I mean, there's some basic things that are good for everybody, but it's very individual.
Yeah.
Or can be.
Yeah.
So it's really being open to learn, I think, about who this person is and what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are. And
that's a really respectful, caring thing to do, is to understand a person as an individual.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what the project of marriage is all about on a certain level.
Yes, it is.
And so to start at this stage practicing that and trying to understand that and try to understand that it's not about finding a person who is me but the opposite sex. It's about exploring and discovering someone that I might actually fit with and connect with and want to go on this journey with. Who is a unique individual who's going to be very different from me in a lot of significant ways.
Right.
Is that a good way to say it?
Yeah. And it really, I mean, the other thing is that it just takes, I mean, I've changed, and Christine has changed, and who she was 27 years ago and who I was 27 years ago, I'm not the same person, so I've changed, and so has she. And it is really a lifelong project. It's not, mm-hmm. I got it figured out, you know.
Before you get married.
Yeah. Yeah. Not even close.
Yeah.
I didn't have any idea what marriage was about when I got married.
Right.
I mean, I had no idea what, mm-hmm. I think that's what I said when I did talked about a marriage was mm-hmm. I had no idea what really God's agenda for marriage was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I asked.
You wanted to know.
I wanted to know.
Even back then.
Yeah.
And you didn't have any idea.
And nobody told me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think especially we just live in a time and place that says something so different than what it really is. And I think we do live under the pressure of, I have to have it figured out before I get married.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of that that says we should have our financial future secure before we get married. We should have our career in place, our who we are, all those things. And there's just no way to be who you are after you're married for 20 years before you are married for 20 years. And that's what you're saying. It's like this lifelong process.
That's in the best of marriages.
In the best of marriages. Well, I know that as a person who's not been married, that the person I am now compared to the person I was 30 years ago is in some ways very surprising to me and not what I would have anticipated. I mean, life has not been what I anticipated.
Right.
And whether you're inside a marriage learning that or outside of a marriage learning that, it just really is true that life is way bigger than we ever think or than we ever thought, and it's about something totally different mm-hmm. than we think, and it's a challenge and a really good one. I mean, a really rich thing, a really worth doing it thing. How's that?
That's good.
Okay. Okay, let's see where we are.
We're about the talk still?
I think maybe we're finished with the talk. Do you
okay.
think? Why don't we talk for a minute, though, before we go on to this, about just what it is that might be wise things to look for in a person that...
That'd be a good thing to do.
...that you marry.
Yeah.
Kind of like, since we say in finding a marriage partner, we're not giving a shopping list or something like that, but what are some of the things that one ought to be concerned about in the person that they might decide to be interested in or might decide that they want to marry?
Are you asking me?
Mm-hmm.
No pressure. I think that... well, what I would say today and what I would say 27 years ago are different.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking today, I would say... that I would look for a person who is committed to goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And what that, how that plays out is, well, I mean, what that looks like in life is that they value being a particular kind of person. They value being honest. They value being just. They value being merciful. They value being kind, respectful. Those kinds of qualities. They value those things that reflect God's character and that they are striving towards that,
mm-hmm.
moving in that, trying to move in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that also, excuse me, means that they're also a person who strives towards taking responsibility for themselves. That is, if they make mistakes, then they say they make mistakes. They take they own that. They take responsibility for that. That's just, I think that's really, really important because...
That seems like such an essential component inside of marriage.
I work with a lot of couples, and the thing that I see that is most destructive in marriages is people blaming each other. That one person will believe that the other person is their worst problem and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think what God's agenda in marriage is that I become clear that I'm my own worst problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that I'm responsible, even if what I would want to see in a person, I mean, if I was 20 years old, 24, 25 years old, or thinking about getting married, that's what I'd want to see. I'd want to see a person dealing with real life issues honestly and and see how they respond to failure. Because the reality is we're all going to fail a lot. And actually that's going to show up in marriage even more.
So really seeing someone in regular life and how they respond to their life.
Right.
And in particular to failure and how they take that on for themselves.
Right.
And how they work with that is some really important information.
Yeah, whether they take on what's not theirs or whether they take on more than is theirs. Both sides of it.
Okay, talk more about that.
Sorry.
We're both recovering.
Well, I think responsibility is a big issue. And obviously there are people that don't take on what is theirs, truly theirs, and that's a huge problem. But there are also people who take on more than is theirs just to sort of manage their comfort level. And so they're trying to kind of keep from having feelings that are uncomfortable or experience discomfort in their life, emotional discomfort. And so they're willing to take on responsibility for other people. And what that really does is, if you and I were in a relationship where I was taking on stuff that you were responsible for, that would say to you, you don't have to be responsible for yourself. And that would be a lie.
And that would help me not be responsible for myself.
Exactly.
Really. It wouldn't really be caring about me.
It would not be caring about you. And I might not want to risk you being upset with me by saying, somehow communicating to you in a way that's respectful but straight, that's your deal. I think responsibility is a huge, huge issue in life, and especially in marriage. It gets ratcheted up in marriage.
Yes.
So that's one character that I would look for.
Yeah.
That's probably the most important to me.
Is taking responsibility. Someone who will take responsibility for themselves at an appropriate level.
In the midst of failure.
Too much and not.
When they fail.
Yeah. It really speaks to character. It speaks to
What's really important.
A willingness to be
vulnerable,
and also a willingness to be wrong.
Yeah.
And a willingness to know ourselves clearly as sinners.
And have someone else know that we're broken.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really there. I mean, I think we hear a lot in our church circles that, of course, you would never marry someone who's not a believer. The trouble is that this is how you're going to know better than what somebody actually says that they believe. And I think that's a really important layer to look at. So someone who...
somebody can go to church and sing songs and read their Bible, but if they're not...
Right.
I've had conversations with people. You've watched me have conversations with people where they were not open to what their spouse was telling them for how they were being hurtful to them. And it just it went on and on and on and on. And my perspective, what I've said to people is that it seems to me that one of the primary functions of the Holy Spirit is to persuade us of what's true. And if I'm not open to what my spouse is saying to me about how I am with them, am I really listening to God, or do I have that?
Is the Holy Spirit actually at work in opening up your eyes to really see the truth
about what I'm responsible for?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if they're not, over a long term.
Yeah. That's kind of the bottom line of whether someone has faith.
That's exactly right.
And that commitment to goodness is going to show up in that way.
Exactly.
Is that how you would say it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I've offended a few people.
Mm-hmm. I've watched that. I've seen that. Mm-hmm. Truth is offensive sometimes. So in conclusion, I think we should just go ahead and go to the conclusion and then open it up for discussion, because we've been talking for a while.
Okay.
I'm curious as to what you guys are hearing and how you're thinking about all this.
Okay.
How's that sound? So my kind of summary statements, there's a couple here, and I think it probably ties together a lot of the things that we've said. True love is not what our culture has sold us, but rather true love is doing right by another person, is really trying to act in their best interest, even if it's at considerable risk to my own feelings of comfort or my own self-interest. And this is really what it takes to make a marriage. So this is something to look for in finding a marriage partner. Being responsible for my own feelings and needs. And there's wisdom in starting that process well before marriage. Is what we can learn outside of marriage is how do I be responsible for me? Because that's what Larry is saying is one of the most important ingredients in finding a marriage partner. What I'm going to be looking for in another person is what I need to be really working on for myself.
Because like in a friendship relationship...
Before I even know that person.
In a friendship relationship, you get it. I mean, that's important to look at and look for. Because in a marriage, it gets really ratcheted up.
Yes, right.
You can't get away from it.
Yes. Yeah. Friendship, you can find out more and more about a person and then decide, you know, maybe they aren't who I thought they were.
Maybe this isn't what's really important to them. Or
right, might not be what's important to them, so I can drift apart from that friend.
Right.
But marriage, you're there. And so you really want to know that.
And it's every day.
Yeah, and it's every day.
Every day. It's every day, isn't it, Dave? Isn't it every day?
I'm sorry.
They're married.
What did
he say? Not to each other.
Oh. Right. Okay, so I want to encourage us to be careful with one another, and what I mean by that is full of care. So really looking out for what's in the best interest of the other person, knowing that we're fragile and we hurt easily, and we also are really good at not knowing what we're after. And so the more we can really try to see what is it that I'm after in this relationship, the better off the other person is going to be, and the better off I'm going to be. So
you're talking about really working at being honest with myself.
Really working at being honest with myself. And and that's something that's very difficult when there are big needs at the surface. And that's true for any of us. And that happens inside of marriage and outside of marriage. So I've worked with couples, too, who inside of marriage, the way they work with the huge needs that they have is very treacherous for the relationship. And that's a really big component. So, and I'm actually going to talk more about that aspect of what it's like to be single and be responsible with big feelings. I think next time is the topic. So I'll go into that in a little bit more detail. So this life is about gaining wisdom and not about finding true love as our culture defines it. Real love is far better than the true love our culture has defined. And the goal of this life and the goal of marriage is ultimately wisdom. So let's seek to do right by each other. Do you have anything to add to that, or how would you conclude?
Well, I think I talked about marriage really the ultimate purpose of marriage is not fulfillment, but sanctification.
Yes.
That's the same is true for any relationship.
Yes.
Or any person in any relationship. Mm-hmm. It just gets ratcheted up in marriage.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So it's not about getting our needs met. It's about God teaching us about what's true in ours, what's true about ourselves,
yeah.
and
yeah.
about reality.
Okay, good. So, questions, feedback, comments? Katie. Katie has something to say.
Yeah. really good. So you guys talked about the fact that once you're getting to know someone and you have this friend, if you have a lot of like one-on-one, heart-to-heart talks and stuff, you can really easily lead them along and make them think something that you're totally not thinking.
Right.
How do you deal with the fact that like at a certain point when you have a good friend, like you're going to get to know them better and you're probably going to have more one-on-one talks, like where's that boundary, and can guys and girls even be friends without there being something more on one or both of their sides at some point, and how do you have to wait like 5 years before you can talk to them, like be alone with them in the same room, and like how do you do it with nobody getting hurt?
Well, your last statement kind of belies a point that I would make. I don't know that the goal is to do it without getting hurt, because I don't know that that's going to be possible. But to try to do it wisely is a really important thing to do. And so what would you say?
I also think that it's different. It's always different to... for a guy to be in a relation, in a one-on-one conversation with a guy, than it is for a guy to be in a one-on-one conversation with a woman, and I think vice versa too. I'm not a woman, so I can't.
I'll weigh in.
Yeah,
it's different.
It's different. And so there's it's just a different dynamic, and I think it's important to be kind of a to pay attention to that and pay attention to. How you're responding to the person or how they're responding to you. I think it's also important to talk about the relationship in the sense of, I mean, if you start picking up on cues that there's something more going on here than what you thought was going on here or what you want to go on here, I think you can talk about that. I think in talking about that, it's just important how you do that. I think you need to think about what's in the best interest of another person. How you say it, how you do that is what's crucial. Does that make? I mean, because I think even if someone else has strong feelings for you that you've realized or something, you can still, you know, my relationship with you is really important to me, and I care about you, and I value our friendship. And I really want to get to know you and be friends and da-da-da-da, but that's not where I see it going here. So you've done it in a way that's actually respectful and caring. And even though they might be hurt because it's not what they want or they... That's okay. I mean, my job in having that conversation with someone is not primarily to prevent them from feeling bad. And I think that's the guiding principle. My responsibility is to be kind and respectful and...
Responsible.
Honest as wisdom dictates. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Because I don't think I have to say everything, because everything may not be the best thing, because that might be what got me there in this mess anyway. So I try to think about what wisdom might dictate in this particular situation.
And I think it can go both directions, because I think that even if the friendship is deepening in a way that is stirring up feelings for you, I had an experience once where that was happening for me, and I had to decide, is this what's going on? Am I on a drug? You know? all that kind of stuff. And the way I finally decided to bring it up was to actually say, because I didn't think, even if that is what was going on, we're not there. We're not. I don't know this person well enough for that to be going on. It's not the right time, even for me. Even if it's reciprocated, even if I really am interested in this person, it's too early. And so that was a component of it. So I came to it by saying, you know what? What's true for me is that the more time we spend, the more I want something that I'm not sure I'm ready to want here. And so I need for us to back off a little bit on how much time we're spending together. And that's
because of what it means to me.
Because of what it means to me. And I'm taking that on, I'm owning it. I'm not saying he's led me on. I'm not saying it's his job to keep me from feeling that. I'm just saying, I think what's wise for me is that we not spend quite this much time together, because I know what I want is really showing up here. And that's not a good thing to put on this friendship just yet.
Well, and it's so, going beyond it's, what's even wise.
Yes, right. And
or sort of prudent to where the relationship is.
Yes. And that wasn't actually a pretty uncomfortable conversation for the other person. They thought that they had done something terribly wrong. And, you know, I was able to say, that's not what I'm saying. But so we got to work with it, and I think it went well. And we backed off, and we're still friends, and it never went anywhere. And I think that's good. But I think that that's the kind of thing that at any point, what you're deciding is what's best, what do I think is best for this friendship, what's best for me, what's best for them, and how do I communicate it in a responsible way? So, does that answer your question? Does that kind of get at it a little bit? Okay. Carl.
Earlier you were saying that when you're getting to know someone of the opposite sex, it's better to go about that through friendship rather than dating, and that you said something along the lines of, after you've gone to the coffee shop a couple times, you're pushing the friendship, and now you're implying some kind of commitment. And a few more times will be the DTR talk. And so, how are you exactly defining friendship? I'm not quite sure.
It's a good question.
I think he's confusing what we are talking about with what our culture thinks, too. Possibly. Does that make sense?
I'm not sure I'm following. Why don't you address
are you,
that?
Is your question, are you talking about what our culture, what we've been talking about, what our culture says about spending time with someone, or are you talking about what you think we're saying?
In other words, what does friendship really look like? How are you defining friendship if you go to a coffee shop twice and you're implying that there's something else going on?
Yeah.
Is that kind of...
Or is it better to know someone as a friend, mm-hmm. Because when they're around other people and you're seeing them in their daily, how they are day by day.
Yeah.
So is that what you mean by friendship? Like with a group of people?
I think it can be with a group of people. I think it can be one-on-one, but what's going to shift is how much exclusivity there is in that friendship. And so if this is a friendship that starts to emerge at the exclusion of other friendships, then it's starting to communicate something that I may or may not intend to be communicating. I may be intending to communicate it, but I might not be ready to communicate that even if I'm wanting to communicate it. Does that make sense? So, in other words, I can go to coffee one-on-one with someone, and it doesn't necessarily, and I can even do that twice, but if I do that twice a week for a month, it might be communicating something that it might not communicate if I'm doing it once a month, or if we're doing it here and there, or if we're, so the more it excludes other friendships, or the more I start to work in my own head with, but now he went to coffee with this other person. What's going on there? Or, I mean, I think that's a really good indicator light for it, is for either person, what comes up if they make plans with someone else, or if, you know, it's, we're really wanting to not be, friendship as I'm defining it for the purpose of this talk is not exclusive. There's no implied or stated commitment that we're anything other than pals.
I think one of the ways to, a good question to ask yourself too is it like if you went to coffee with like with Nate in 2 weeks, you went to coffee twice with him, and then you went to coffee with someone else who was a female, would that mean something different to you? What would that mean to you? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's giggleable, but...
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So if I'm spending time with someone, what does it mean to me? Is there something more going on than just friendship? Because is it... I mean, obviously, it's different, like what I was saying earlier, it's different for men to be with men than it is for men to be with women and vice versa. There's a different dynamic. But what is it that I want here? Or what does this mean to me? And is it a friendship? And I can ask that question and sort of try to work with what I really want here, what's going on here.
Because I might notice that I actually really want to go to have coffee with that person. Where, you know, this friend over here is like, I'll catch you next time. Or, or it helps you know what you're... Right. What's going on for you? Is that...
Yeah, and it may be more than I'm just... I need to be honest with myself about why I'm really more interested in this person than someone else. Is it just like because I like the conversation better? I mean, probably not.
And another question is kind of bouncing off Katie's question.
Where are your loads? On how you should approach becoming better friends with someone of the opposite sex.
Say that again.
And how you should approach becoming better friends with someone of the opposite sex. And you said, as much as wisdom says, pretty much
dictates.
And I'm not sure what that means.
Okay. Well,
sounds really great.
Well, let me try that on, take that on a little bit. In this example that I was talking about, with this person that I was spending some time with, as my feelings were telling me that I actually do have these needs and I want something more, and he's pretty cute, and maybe he's this person who is going to be all that. You know what I'm saying? But the fact is, I've known him 2 months, and I've started hanging out with him for 2 weeks, and I really don't know anything about him other than the story that he's told me so far in this much time. And so that's where wisdom doesn't necessarily dictate that I would decide that because I have these feelings swirling around that I'm going for this because he looks good. I mean, I don't mean just attractive. I mean, attractive is good. But I mean, he's like, you know, I'm counting down the list here, and I think he might have it, you know.
And there's a real possibility here.
There's a real possibility here, you know, very
and
possibly.
And I'm playing with that in my head.
And I'm going there. You know, I'm just really working with that because I want it. And I think that's what you really have to work with is we want it. And it's okay that we want it. It's natural that we want it. Right. But we need to be responsible with that.
And we're fooling ourselves if we say we don't.
Yes, that's right. We are. And so what I want to say then is that wisdom did not dictate that I move forward at that stage in that relationship. Actually, wisdom dictated that I move way back, which is what I decided I needed to do because I was getting way ahead of myself and I was getting way ahead of where this friendship was. And rather than saying, do you like me like I like you, which is what we might want to do with the relationship defining talk or whatever, what instead I'm saying is, you know what, I'm going somewhere that I need to not be going to put this on our friendship, and so I need us to spend less time together.
I don't really know you well enough to be doing it in my head.
Exactly.
That's what we're talking about, wisdom.
Yeah. And that's pretty much what I said, is that I don't know you well enough to be going where I'm going in my head. And I'd like to get to know you, but I want it to be from this distance that is wise. So, is that helpful?
I think so, but then that is, how do you know when you know someone well enough to go that way in your head?
If you're, well,
phone number.
Jack. Yeah. Jack, that's not helpful.
Well, while I'm working with all the feelings that I have going on and I'm talking to my friends about that to work it out and to understand it better rather than talking about this person, what I want to be deciding over time is this a person I think I want to marry? And I'm not talking about hanging out more. I'm talking about when am I ready to decide this is a person I think I actually want to marry. At that point, it might be time to have the talk. Now, I'm not saying you don't ever talk about anything before that, but I am saying that that's the question that's on the table. That I'm not asking, can we hang out more now? Is it wise that we hang out more now? I'm asking, is this somebody that I could see myself marrying? And do I have enough information to even go there yet? I hear the wheels turning all the way across the room. Okay, and you wanted to say something.
This scenario that he's presenting, and basically the way I see it is, in my experience, is the evolution of a relationship. And a lot of them have started this way. And I know exactly what you mean as far as kind of you're presenting yourself. But isn't the natural evolution, if you do that, then you become friends and you hang out with similar, you know, I'd rather use my big voice, and then you hang out with similar groups of people and you get to know each other that way. I mean, it seems like that's the natural evolution. And then sooner or later, it seems more like a character flaw if you don't present who you are to that person. I mean, that's what I think of, because I don't think of it as being unnatural to meet somebody.
Yes.
And have this experience.
To really get to know each other.
And, you know what I mean, it seems more like an issue of the individual and not the scenario to me.
Yeah.
It's not even a question, but it's not really a question.
No, I think that's really right, that it's really about there's a natural progression of getting to know people. And I think it's the exclusivity that can be misleading. If we get to be in a situation where I'm only hanging out with that one person and I'm telling them things that I'm not telling anyone else about me, I think there is a natural deepening, but I think what you want to keep in mind is to keep the intimacy and the commitment, trying to keep intimacy and commitment going together. So, in other words, at a certain point, I'm not going to want to be more intimate with this person unless I'm deciding to be married to them. And I mean emotionally, not physically as well, but emotionally. How much do I share of myself with a friend of the opposite sex? And I think that is a trickier question, because I could share a lot more of myself with a friend of the same sex without the same inherent risk of communicating something I don't mean to communicate. Does that make sense?
So there's a question that keeps bubbling up and it keeps going away just as fast. That's a problem. But thinking about having the talk or whatever, say in a circumstance where you knew that it wasn't, or that I knew that it wasn't right, or that I knew that I didn't want something, but do things go away if you tell them to go away? Because I don't think they do.
Oh, feelings, you mean?
Yeah, like feelings. Like, so like just in general or from your own experiences, mm-hmm. Is it better to have a talk and, like, try to kill it, or, like, talking about it, you know,
No. I think it's better to try to really be honest with yourself.
Yeah.
And I don't think that getting the feelings to go away is necessarily the goal, but to really try to understand them and also to be responsible with them. And also to really be wise in the face of them. And so in this situation that I've been talking about, I was very disappointed at first that this wasn't a reciprocal thing going on. But I was so thankful that I had said it when I did, instead of going on down the road a ways and finding out that it wasn't reciprocal. So did the feelings go away? Mm-mm. Not for a good while. And what did I have to do with that? I had to know that I have some really deep longings that God is still not choosing to grant me and to give me. And I have to work with that. And I cried on a friend's shoulder quite a bit about that. And I worked with that, and I felt it. And I tried to not put it onto this person who it really wasn't about at all. Because I don't even know this person, to be honest. I mean, that's kind of what's happening. And the fact is, I mean...
It faced you into some really important questions for yours.
It's very important stuff. And it helps me know kind of who I am before God and whether or not I'm even okay with the life that He's giving to me.
Exactly.
And how do I look at waiting for what He's going to give me rather than demanding what I want from Him?
Especially in the middle of feeling all these feelings,
yes,
and being aware that,
yes,
they're not being met.
Yes. Those are such important things. And it's so much a part of our sanctification to be having to live with that and on that level. And the goal of marriage, the goal of life, is sanctification. I mean, inside or outside of marriage. And so that kind of honesty with ourselves, I think, can take us to those places in a good way. So it isn't that the feelings don't go away, but the feelings are information for me. The feelings are part of who I am. And I really need to know that they're more about me than they are about the other person, because that's actually going to be true inside of a marriage as well.
And everything in between is totally gray. Like, specifically, where do you see that? Because it's like, okay, so you have this friendship, and you're hanging out in groups, and you're seeing this person from a distance for a really long time, and, you know, you're like, you feel feelings for them, and then you think, okay, I want to marry him. I don't see the definition of a friendship to now, this is what we are, to now we're married. I mean, there's a whole lot of gray area, like, mm-hmm. I don't know if you're saying don't hold hands and don't kiss, don't do anything that isn't friends, and then mm-hmm. put the ring on, mm-hmm. and now you're married.
Well, I think there's definitely going to be a really messy, gray transitional period between being single and being married with an individual person. What I'm suggesting, and I think what we're suggesting, is that we not take that lightly, that we not do that with any person we develop feelings for, and that we don't go down the road of being committed to that person apart from actually asking the question, are we going to marry? And I guess what I mean is, when you say or saying, you know, don't hold hands, don't be exclusive in that way, I think that that's a really significant thing, to hold hands.
Basically you're saying, sorry, mm-hmm. but I mean, basically it's just like, I want a clear answer. I mean, you're saying,
yeah,
here you are, your friends, you think, this is a person for me, I want to marry them, they want to marry me, let's have the conversation, let's decide we're going to get married one day. And then it's like, okay, now we can hold hands, and now we can XYZ, and then we're going to put the rings on, and we're going to be married. You know what I mean? I mean, I understand mm-hmm. that the air is gray, but...
After the talk.
Yeah,
after the talk.
Yeah, it's basically, yeah. Don't talk when you say, you know. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Say that again?
Like, friendship, you know you're going to marry him, so have the talk, and then marry him. I understand it's gray, but I don't seem clear from you what you mean by gray. You know what I mean?
I don't know that you can.
You don't see, like, the specific, this is what happens from that talk.
Right.
Yeah, we're not...
Right.
I guess the way I would add to it is, like, can you put it in context? I've been friends with this person for a number of years. I know that they care about me. I don't know exactly how they care about me. So then is the suggestion that you sit down and say, could I possibly be the person that you would want to marry? Because that's kind of hard. That's, you know what I mean? That's like...
Take takes the relationship to a different level, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. But
is
if you...
Is that the suggestion, though? Is that what you
well,
mean?
In some ways, yes. I mean, if you're being responsible in that friendship for those 3 years, and you've really gotten to know that person, then you probably have enough information to decide whether or not... I think what there's kind of a fallacy out there that says we need to be in a romantic relationship to decide that. So that's something I think is important to note. So we kind of say, well, no, because it is a really, like Larry's saying, it's a ratcheted, it's a really different relationship to be married to someone. And it's a ratcheted up way of being with another person. But it isn't fundamentally different than friendship on a certain level. I mean, it's the same dynamic, you're doing the same stuff, you're living life, you're in fact, marriage is very normal when it comes right down to it. It's normal life. It's not the romantic ideal, the dream that is going to solve everything. It's, you know, spending weekends fixing the fence together when it comes right down to it, or like figuring out how that's going to happen, or kind of being in mundane life together. And so friendship is actually a really good picture of how you relate to one another, the things you care about, common interests, all those things. And so if you know someone for 3 years in a friendship and you think, gosh, you know, something's deepening here, and I think...
And you've gotten to know them and you've seen what they value and what's important to them.
Yes,
and
right.
And that
you share those values,
right.
And that you are on the same journey, that maybe then God is giving the joining of those journeys. And how do you decide that? You talk about it and you see if they're on the same page and if they're interested in that too. And I don't know that there's any rule that says you don't go from there to the chapel. I mean, if you have that kind of information, you don't have to have a long engagement. I mean, you already know the person.
Is that biblical? I mean, I don't mean that in like a... But I'm just wondering, I mean, where mm-hmm. you're drawing that. I mean, is that...
Well, I think it's hard to say something that's biblical because culture is so much a part of this. And the culture that the culture, I mean, if we were going to be biblical, we would be doing arranged polygamous marriages on a certain level. and I don't really recommend that. But I do think that what's biblical is trying to be loving. And really putting forward that the most important thing I can do here is to try to act in someone else's best interest and to not rip them off. I mean, that's where, you know, these dating relationships or these committed friendships or however you want to call them, is they're very hard on us and they're very misleading. And like Katie was saying, how can you do this without getting hurt? And I said, I don't know that you will do it without getting hurt, and I don't think that's necessarily the goal. But I think we can do it in a way that's wiser and not wise. And the not wise version is to be married over and over and over before we ever get married. Because we've given so much of ourselves and our hearts and our time and our energy without ever saying, you know what, I really want this to lead to marriage, and I think that's wise. So the transition is going to be messy. It's not going to be... And I don't think you don't talk about it for 3 years, necessarily. But you talk about it, and then you decide, how do we work with where we are right now? Maybe we need to put some distance between us because we're not ready to get married right now. But I'd like to think about it one day. Or, you know, it can look a lot of different ways. And so one of the reasons why we're not defining it more is that I think it just so depends on the individuals and on the things that we bring, and on God ultimately giving us that gift. Is that helpful?
Yes.
Okay, that's a good question.
I think.
Well, I think our time's up. If somebody has one more thought or comment, or we can go. Okay. Thanks, everybody.